Hello and welcome to Live Like You Play, the podcast which reveals the humanity in sport and the role that sport can play in your faith. Today we're on a bit of an odyssey because my guest is taking us on a journey across land, language, labels and identity. Thing is, he speaks one language I'd never heard before.
Arunani fufulde? Anani? Ananata wallahi, ananata.
I am guessing most of you haven't heard that either. This is Gerald Mbale speaking. He's from Cameroon, although he lives in Milan now in northern Italy. And that's where his story is going to take us. First, though, that language again. What's it called?
Fulbe, which is a language which is spoken in the north part of Cameroon. To be precise, around Garoua, Maroua, Kusseri, Tuboro, the Muslim area. So Fulbe is the dialect, and it is just like a common language which is used in everywhere in that area. Arunani Fulbe? Anani? Ananata wallahi, ananata.
Well, whatever you said, it sounds great.
I asked to make sure if you understand what I'm saying. So I asked, are you getting what I'm saying? You said yes. I said, okay, great.
Fulbe, lovely sound, isn't it? Gerald also speaks fluent French and Italian. We decided to stick to English. And for a football mad 22-year-old, there's really only one place to start. Who do you support?
Oh, right now my football team is the Juventus over here in Italy.
Juventus, the old lady.
Yeah.
are they going to win the title this year, do you think? Looks like they might have blown it.
But we hope so, but they always win, so I love the football they play, so we have always been the best.
Gerald, you disappoint me, you're just picking the winner as your favourite team, that's the...
That's what everyone thinks, but that's not what lies behind, you know. I love the history and I love the football they play as well, not only because they are the winning team.
Yeah, and did you support them in Cameroon, back in the old days?
Back in the old days, when I was still very small, I used to support Barcelona because we had a great football star, Samuel Eto'o, that used to give us the possibility of dreaming. So we were like all Barcelona fans by then.
You were all Eto'o out on the football pitch.
Yeah. But, you know, I support Juventus as a team here in Italy, but I have football heroes that are not playing in Juventus.
Today, Gerald works for the Special Olympics in Italy, first ambassador of the Special Olympics Unified Refugee Programme. It is a label he wears with pride. But you do need to hear his story to appreciate why it's quite so important to him. Cameroon is part of a distant memory for him now. He left the country of his birth as a young teenager and began a journey familiar to tens of thousands of people and yet hard to imagine for most of us. So that's where we started. I'm going to throw you back briefly to 2014 and to the point at which you realised that you couldn't stay in Cameroon any longer. What made you make that decision?
The decision wasn't in 100% my decision, I'm going to say. You know, because back then in Cameroon, I was this little boy attending primary school and living not a stable life at all, because I was mostly living from one uncle to the other. And I was living in the family compound in the village where my grandfather was a man with more than two wives, and he had a lot of children. And I grew up there because of the fact that my mom took me back there to live with them while she was in another area attending school and trying to make her own life. So this was already the unstable life I had when I was very small.
It's what we would call complicated.
Yeah, it was complicated. It was really complicated. And I was performing a lot of commercial activities on behalf of my uncle, because he was selling items from agriculture, onions. He was selling native clothes and shoes, etc. He was just a businessman. So at a certain point of time, he decided to remove me from the family compound. He took me to live with him, saying that I was going to be attending and helping him in his business. And it was quite fine. So I was used to like traveling around village to go and buy goods, merchandise. Sometimes I will go alone. Sometimes I will go with him. So, you know, during my childhood, I was already totally independent, you know. And suddenly things changed. You know, we were at the border. At the border side, we were bordering countries with Nigeria. And it was just a target zone for this group of armed men who usually terrorized that area.
This was Boko Haram, was it?
Yeah, they were commonly called Boko Haram. And, you know, we can say that Boko Haram, but it was just a mixed group of an intense conflict. So due to all these conflicts, I was sent to go and buy merchandise with this unknown man. And I literally understood along the way that this was an organized trip, an organized journey by my uncle. And I realized that I was going far and far and far away from my homeland and far away from my loved ones. And that is when I realized. So I was later told that this is what is happening. We will be going to a safe area.
Wow. So just let me ask you about that then, because it came upon you very suddenly. It sounds like you were quite happy in what you were doing and where you were, and you were very busy and you had lots of things to get on with and your friends. How did you feel when you realized that already you'd gone?
It was quite challenging. That was when everything started, everything changed to a very terrible way. I found myself walking in the steps of Hell of Dante. I realized that I was moving into areas where I was unable to communicate due to language barrier. I realized that I was going far, and I was very sad because I had no way to contact and I could not go back. So I got involved in a journey of crucial encounters where we were mixed and obliged to see all types of brutal scenes, being mixed with human traffickers and corrupt police. And all this was done by this unknown man, which was the one accompanying me. So we were just obliged to stay silent. And that is how I left from Cameroon to Nigeria, and from Nigeria to Niger, from Niger to Algeria.
Wow. I just want to come back a little bit on what you said earlier, because you said it was like the Hell of Dante, which already suggests something about your future and your education, because that's a very literary reference that you've made. But Dante's Inferno, I'm not going to ask you for details, but that's obviously a pretty dreadful journey to be put through. I mean, the bottom line is, after I think about a year or so, you did manage to get on a boat, you got into the Mediterranean, and you were rescued.
Yeah. I'm going to come back a little bit on how it was, you know, because it was a very challenging journey, but much more challenging when we arrived in Libya, you know, where it was a type of horrific situation we were witnessing and we were living. And when I start imagining on how in one day, there is 24 hours, and we were living each hour in hell. Daily brutal scene where you don't know that nothing was right, where life had no value at all. You know, where you were seeing people perishing in their own desperation, people losing their lives. The only instant I had at that particular moment was this sudden situation of believing that there was something very, very good are waiting for me at the other side. And I had nothing that could tell me that it was going to be me perishing or me dying or me being in that situation of those people. I had something very strong that was enabling me to live the life as if I wasn't feeling anything.
You're telling us a story which really points to no way out. I mean, and we're not surprised to hear it. So I suppose in many respects, you can already consider yourself very lucky that you did get onto a boat. And despite this hell that you've talked about, you were rescued, you were brought to Italy, but presumably still with absolutely no idea what that really was going to lead to.
Yeah, I really had no idea of what was going to happen next, as you said. And I was rescued and I was transferred from Sicilia to a reception center in the north part of Italy. And it was a reception center of the Italian Red Cross. At the beginning, it was still challenging. A young guy in a new area where you can't speak the language, where you are like still isolated, where you don't know what is going to happen next, you know, this sensation of confusion, you know, still living in your traumas, still sleeping and dreaming and what you lived some weeks ago, you know, that was the feeling at the beginning.
But this is what really interests me, because you've talked about how traumatic this journey was, and I can understand why. And some of the things you've seen, which we don't need to go into detail about, must have been quite dehumanizing even. And yet here you are, you've made your way to Sicily, you've got to a holding camp, and you're introduced to an educator. This is Luigi Petrillo. And I think he said, I came across a young man who just seemed to have no fear. So was that you putting on a big strong man front, or really did you feel pretty unfearful?
In some way, yes, because not only at that moment, but even while I was still in my deep desperation, I had something very strong in me that was always by my side, and I had a belief on something I believe in personal. And I was just in that situation where I said, okay, let me wait to see what will happen next. And Luigi, exactly as you said, I met Luigi. He was my educator, and he had the purpose of helping me in my Italian skills, and also giving me the possibility of orientating myself in the local municipality where we were living. And that is where it all started, you know, where I got the opportunity through Luigi to practice one of the best thing I have ever done in my life. One of the best thing I was practicing even when I was small, you know, what gave me joy, what makes me to forget everything, which was definitely football.
Right.
Yeah, that is the encounter with Luigi was so powerful, because that is what made me to be who I am today, try and do my best, you know, in my own way, through the means of sport, because sport has done very great thing in my life and it's still doing great things in my life right now.
So was sport, football in particular, soccer as they say across the water, was that initially an opportunity to forget what you've been through, at least when you're out on the pitch, or did you see it as a part of your education, you know, that the team spirit, the respect for the rules, or is that asking a bit much of a young man who's just been given a chance to get a ball and have a kick around?
No, it was both of things, you know, because, you know, practicing sport when I was a child has already given me the spirit of team, of building a team, the spirit of being in a team, the spirit of respect and love for my partners, and also the spirit of determination as well. So it was both the thing, you know, and sport was the main element that leads me into those values. So being involved in practicing sport with athletes with and without intellectual disability was the additional stuff out of this, you know, because it was practicing sport, playing football, and practicing sport with people which I was sure that in my origin country weren't given the possibility of doing that, you know. So there were both elements involved in this. So when I was in the pitch of game, I was forgetting everything. I was totally fine. And practicing sport with people that accepted me the way I was, without judging my skin color, without judging anything, just getting to the pitch and playing with me and saying, Jeringa, welcome, was very, 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 very touching for me.
Now, who let me ask you, because I think this takes us to the world of Special Olympics that you're so involved in now, because are you talking about Special Olympians there, the ones who saw you entirely for who you are? You're Gerald. You're not a black guy, you're not an immigrant, you're not a refugee, you're Gerald.
Exactly, I'm Gerald. And this is what they told me. They were calling me Gerald. This is powerful. Thank you, David. So yeah, I'm talking actually about the athletes of Special Olympics. Yeah, because while I was getting involved with the athletes, I wasn't aware of Special Olympics. I was aware of athletes. I was playing football with athletes. Then I later on participated in competition with the guy. They were involved in participation in regional competitions, in regional tournaments of Special Olympics. And this is where I come together. I come to encounter the world of Special Olympics. But being by the side of the athletes, like a unified partner, playing with them.
Right, because this is the thing, and perhaps there will still be people who, I think most people have heard of the Special Olympics. They don't all necessarily fully understand it, but we're talking about people with intellectual disabilities. I think that's the phrase, and they don't judge you.
Absolutely no. That was the fantastic thing about this, about playing sport with athletes with intellectual disabilities, but athletes.
This is fascinating because here you are, you've come into a world where actually you're able to give something now. You've found your place and it's in Italy. You've found a community. You've got your sport, which you love. And you're now getting involved and helping people with intellectual disabilities in their sport. And yet you feel that you're the one who's being given the help because you've been included. And this issue of inclusion is so critical in the world.
This is the fantastic thing about this. You know, many people will think Gerald is the one helping athletes with intellectual disability, but that is a big... It is a mutual help. It's a mutual understanding between us, you know, because I found myself in a situation where I was isolated. I thought I was nobody because I was in a community where the migration phenomenon was still new, where I was still looked like the different guy, you know. I came in contact with athletes that embraced me and gave me the possibility in going to the pitch of game with them, playing, calling me by name. And, you know, I realized my own difficulties meeting with their own in another language, you know. We were like all looking for an opportunity, a possibility to amplify our voice and say, and we need a chance, we need a possibility, and we can do it. You know, they accepted me, they gave me the possibility, or regaining my self-esteem. They empowered me, and I empowered them as well. I don't know if you're getting it, David.
Oh, no, I'm getting it, absolutely. And I have to be honest, you know, and I fall into the prejudices that many others might, which is the idea that it's a miracle that you got this far, because it is. I mean, so many others would not have made it. That's the truth of the matter. And having got this far, and having to be hugely resourceful to get there, and careful and cunning and clever and smart and looking after yourself, you've managed to now create a world in which you're, in a sense, you're giving back to that ability to go again, to sort of live a life again. Am I being a bit too sweet and sugary about it, or is that a fair comment?
You are indeed. You are getting sweet and sugar about it. That is it. Yeah. That is it. I was given an opportunity. I was given an opportunity by the athletes, and I gave them an opportunity as well, you know. And this is just the fusion that is existing between the relation we have out of the pitch and in the pitch. We are the one trying to make people understand the possibility that we could give in restoring dignity into people. You understand? And I am unable to do it alone.
Let me ask you this then, because we talk at Sport for Humanity, we talk a lot, and we do in this podcast, Live Like You Play, we talk about the values that sport and faith both seem to share in some respects, and there are six of them, and I'll just run through them again. It's love, compassion, respect, balance, joy, and enlightenment. And I just wonder if you can pick out one of those values that perhaps best represents the way you see life. I mean, what matters most to you? What's the big value out of those six for you?
The big value out of those six value to me is love. Why am I picking love? Because I have been loved, and I see all the other values involved in love. You know, love is the element that has always accompanied me since in my moments of desperation and who I am today. You know, I was always considered. I was always given an opportunity by unknown people. I felt love in anything I was doing. And I arrived into my own land of dream, into my own land of security. I was once more shown love by the athletes of Special Olympics and by everyone by my side. You know, the love they showed me in the pitch of game, playing with them. The love they showed me out of the pitch of game, playing with them. And the love I am having right now, being part of the organization that fight for inclusion on their behalf. So love has always accompanied me in this moment. My value is going to be love.
Let's have a look at this sporting fandom that you've got. I know Juventus is your team. We always ask on the podcast, Gerald, what is your best sporting memory, first of all? Have you got a biggest, best sporting memory for us?
Yes, I got a big sporting memory.
Okay.
In 2015, 1 week after being rescued, because I was rescued in, I was transferred on the 1st November 2015 into the reception center at Settimo Torinese. On that particular day, we organized a five-a-side game, and we were participating in the tournament with some type of strange sensation. You know, among us, there were people with malnutrition, people with less physical injuries. We were all tired. We were tired from the journey, from the rescue, from the seaside and everything. And we organized this tournament where we were five-a-side. And we were playing on that pitch in the center without bothering, without worries. We were all concentrating, targeting on playing. You know, we forgot about everything. We forgot about the traumas, the confusion, the isolation, everything. And we were all happy. And I remember after a goal made by a friend, we all hugged and embraced ourselves in the pitch, and some of the guys started crying, you know, and they were unable to continue the game. And we were all just in a very joyful sensation, and we started, all of us, singing the song we sang on the rescue ship, which was a song of thanks given to the Lord. And we had the responsible of the reception center watching at us and joining us in singing with us, and we were very grateful. And this moment, I still recall it like if it was yesterday, because it was a combined moment of a lot of things together.
That's such a powerful. That's the power of sport, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Now you said there that you ended up singing a song of thanksgiving to the Lord. I haven't even asked you about your faith. It is so clear that you have plenty of it, because it's got you through so much hardship. It's taken you over so many challenges. Do you carry your faith in a religious way? Do you feel that you are an active Christian? How do you manage your sense of faith? What is faith to you?
Faith is a belief. It is the belief of unseen things, and just the belief of the fact that nothing is impossible. And if I earlier told you that when I was traveling, I had something in me very strong that was always forcing me to believe that a better thing was waiting for me at the other side of the Mediterranean Sea, was just faith. Faith is one of my best companions, and has always been my best companion. And I think when I think about faith and religion, it's something very intimate and private for me, because I have a very strong belief. And I know that if I am alive today, it's because of the miracles of something supernatural, something in which I believe, which is God. And this faith is so strong in the way that I know that it is taking me through every moment of my life, because the same belief and the same God that was generous to me, that did not leave me to perish in my desperate moment, that took me over the Mediterranean Sea, and which is still by my side right now, it is the same God that has installed this huge amount of faith that I have with me. And the funny thing about my religion aspect is a little bit complicated, because I am originally from a Muslim family. My grandfathers, my mom's family, everybody's Muslim. And when I grew up traveling from one area to another, from one uncle to the other, I started fellowshipping Christian and evangelical churches. And today, my faith is much more personal, in the sense that I believe there is something supernatural. I believe there is a big God over there watching for everyone and watching for me. I don't believe in churches, in a specific post of worshiping. I believe in God. I believe in something that exists and that is giving me a huge quantity of faith, the huge quantity of believing, and the huge quantity of knowing that He's protecting me.
What you've done, it seems, Gerald, is you've found the faith that works for you and that means the most to you. And I think that's what everyone really looks for, isn't it? One of the other things, I mentioned the six values that we have at Sport for Humanity. We also talk about matters of inclusion, as opposed to exclusion, that people should feel included in the world, of involvement, rather than not taking part, but being involved, because that has a role in itself. And then thirdly, the third I, if you like, is inspiration. And I've got to say, you do embody all three of those, which is very rare. You have been excluded and you found inclusion. You're utterly involved in helping others who might be seen as disadvantaged, and many people would say are less fortunate than others. I think you see them very much as equals, and you are an incredibly inspirational character. I'm not trying to give you a bigger head. you come over as a very modest guy to me. But it's extraordinary that those three things have come together. And I suppose, given that, you can feel lucky.
I really feel lucky. I feel highly lucky. I really feel it in the role I have been given the opportunity to have today as an advisor on behalf of the refugee programming with Special Olympics Europe Russia, the Unified with Refugee, which is a movement for inclusion that uses sport for social change. All this inspired in a precise moment, the day I stepped my feet and I got welcomed by the athlete, which definitely took me to Abu Dhabi, to the World Games, where I was able to participate and I was able to feel the sensation, the amazing feeling of this sort of non-verbal communication of all the population of the whole world in a specific place at a specific time on a specific purpose. So I just said, I am at the right place at the right time with the right guys in the real moment. So that is it. And I got all the inspiration from there. And I said, yes, this is the real moment. I think I met my family. I think at the place where together we could try to make the world a better place.
So that's Gerald, just Gerald. No refugee or immigrant or black guy or carer. He's Gerald. He is also preparing for university, Dante's Inferno. That's hardly your average text, is it? We can't be too surprised that he wants to further his education. He is also, by the way, a semi-professional footballer now. So huge thanks to him for sharing his story and his faith. Thanks to all of you for listening. Live Like You Play is a podcast for sport at the service of humanity. If you type in sportforhumanity.com, you'll get much more. The music comes courtesy of Austin Hill Music. You can go to austinhillmusic.com if you're on the lookout for something to work with your podcast or radio show or TV or film production. And if you like what you've heard, please do spread the word and the link and give us a review. It all helps. Live like you play. It's a win-win.